Taking Stock with Pim Fox.
First, let's take a look at what's happening with China raising interest rates. What does this mean for investors and U.S. stocks? The stock market gaining today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 53 points. The S&P 500 is at 1322, a gain of almost 3 points. Let's bring in TJ Marta from Bloomberg. First word, TJ Marta, formerly the head of fixed income strategy at RBC Capital Markets, also a strategist for fixed income as well as currency at Citigroup, now here at Bloomberg. TJ Marta, great to have you with us in the studio. What does this mean, the idea that, okay, China raises interest rates because they're worried about too much inflation? So this means what? That people are going to put more money away in the banks and not spend it in China?
Well, it's interesting because there are two different possibilities anytime a central bank raises rates. At the beginning, when they raise rates, it's seen as a wonderful thing because the economy must be so strong that the central bank has to step in. At some point, though, there's an inflection point where people are worried that because the central bank is hiking, that the economy is now going to slow down. So when they first hiked, you saw industrial metals begin to sell off.
Right. Copper, for example, fell
sharply. And that would tie into fears of future growth. However, by the end of the day, copper's back testing new highs. And apparently, it's still all good. Stocks up.
I like the way you use that word, apparently. It's now all good. It falls at the beginning, then it increases. Now we see, as you say, stocks continue to rally. I'm going to find out a little bit more and see if this has also something to do with the value of the dollar and what this means for other types of commodities since they're all priced in U.S. dollars. We've got much more with TJ Marta from Bloomberg. First word.
Just hold on.
We know the Federal Reserve is holding on loosely when it comes to monetary policy. You can't say the same for China's central bank. They just raised interest rates for the third time since October. And to give us a sense here of taking stock of why that matters, we have TJ Marta with us of Bloomberg, as it turns out, formerly Marta on the Markets. And this is Taking Stock. I'm Dave Wilson, along with Pim Fox. So, okay, TJ, let's look at the Federal Reserve versus China's central bank. To what extent is what's happening in China a function of the fact that you've got near zero interest rates here in the U.S.?
That's exactly a phenomenal point to make. You've got two different economies going on right now. You've got the developed world, which is aging, which is over-leveraged, has too much debt, and has blown up its banking system. And then you've got the emerging markets, say Brazil, India, China. I'd exclude Russia from that. And they're continuing to move right along. They're growing. They're benefiting from a young population. They're benefiting from people moving into the middle class. So it's two different things, two different issues for the central banks. And you've got the Fed wanting to stay easy. You've got the China worrying about inflation. And they're working against each other right now.
TJ, let me just challenge you on a couple of points. Let's start with talking about banks in China. Does anybody really believe the books in China? Because, I mean, isn't there a situation where the government basically tells the banks what to do? It tells them when to raise and lower interest rates. And by the way, the government owns, through either the Chinese army or through various local party officials, they own a lot of the economy. And there are a lot of very low-cost loans that have been offered to various entities, not because they're good credit risks, not because they're going to pay the money back, but because this is what the government wants to have happen. So, I mean, the banks, come on. The banks, they're not like banks like here in the United States. They might be better, but they're not the same.
Exactly. I would agree with your point. I once heard a regulator for the U.S. government say that the top-level officials at all levels of the government were Harvard educated. They had a firm understanding of capitalism. But this person also pointed out that you scratch an inch deep and you're going with the old communist Politburo. So you're seeing the local give outs of money are still being done in a command control type situation. I'm always amazed when the economic data misses expectations. because I would think that it would hit expectations.
Yeah, because there's a call that goes out and says, you know, we were looking for that 8% GDP growth. You came in with 7.4. Would you just round up for a change? All right, so we got the banks. So it might be a bit of a question mark there. You talk about the growth, the domestic growth. This is not happening overnight. And building infrastructure, in many cases, is a lot easier than maintaining infrastructure over a long period of time. And there is, can we say, a symbiotic relationship between what goes on in China and what goes on in the United States? Because they had to do something with all that money that we gave them in terms of buying all of the toys, buying all of the consumer products that are made in China. Well, what were they going to do with the dollars? They didn't want to go and buy their local currency, the renminbi, because what would it do? That would increase the value of the renminbi, of the yuan, and that would just make it more expensive for their exports. This is still an export-based economy.
Yes, and there is a photograph circulating around Wall Street, and it's a Google Earth map of a city in China. It is completely empty, that city. There's about 15 cars in it, and all those cars are parked at the government building. Everything else is empty. Nobody on the streets, no cars, just a lot of empty buildings.
So, I wonder if they have reserved parking, you know, with their names on it. You know, I heard, you know, Bloomberg Business Week's got a story about how reserved parking is going the way of the dodo in the United States, but maybe that's not the case in China. Dave Wilson?
I wanted to touch on the issue of inflation. We actually have a story out today comparing inflation rates in the BRIC countries. China's at 4.6%. Brazil's at 6, Russia's at 9.6, India's at 9.5. So by that standard, you can argue that inflation is relatively dormant. But again, you have to question whether the numbers are really what they are. I mean, I've seen some suggesting that the rate there is much higher. But either way, I mean, with China's central bank raising rates, is it more a case that they're ahead of the curve or that these other BRIC countries are behind?
I would think that China is ahead of the curve. So far, they've done a good job of not popping any bubbles. If you look at their PMI, again, trusting that it is based in reality.
Right, the Purchasing Managers Index. Yeah.
It is trending lower, but still expansionary. So some could argue China has gotten it right so far. The other problem with inflation, though, when you look at the U.S., is it's very arguable that the Fed is not blowing massive bubbles in the emerging markets and in commodities, and that was a key story on this morning's economic brief that was put out by Michael Rosenberg. And that continues to be an issue. If you talk to anybody from the Fed, they don't look at food inflation. I've got two issues with that. First of all, they say that in the past, food inflation has derived from floods, things like that, or droughts. The problem now, though, is you have 200 million Chinese coming on board with the modern economy, and they're going from one meal to three meals a day. That is a demand shift.
That's a big increase. All right, we're going to continue the conversation. We're going to get point number two coming up more with TJ Marta from Bloomberg First Word. This is Taking Stock on Bloomberg Radio.
Mirrors on the ceiling, they pink champagne on ice. And she said, we are all just prisoners here of our own device. And in the master's chambers.
Oh, reaching for a reason to play the Eagles, indeed. All right, this is Taking Stock on Bloomberg. I'm Pim Fox, my co-host Dave Wilson, our musical director. Just for this segment, though, TJ Marta from Bloomberg First Word. All right, TJ Marta, the idea being that Ben Bernanke is trying to kill the Great Recession and deflation with his, of course, steely knife of monetary easing. I think people would think it's more of a fire hose, but never mind. But it also might end up a prisoner of his own device to inflation or a hard landing. Uh-oh, I thought we were going to have some good news here. I mean, the market's up, the Chinese raise interest rates, so we get to kind of climb that wall of worry, and you're saying look a little bit further into the future.
Well, whenever you have a fixed income analyst on, they're always the ones who are the worriers in the wall of worry.
You guys are not like, you know, the glass is half empty. You're like the glass doesn't exist and you have to borrow it from somebody else. It's not even your glass.
Pretty much. They do a psychological profile on you before they decide whether you're a stock analyst or a fixed income.
And you lost.
Yeah, evidently.
So what does this mean, this idea that what happens in China, inflation, we've seen rates go up in places like Indonesia as well. So Asian countries that are doing pretty well, raising rates, Brazil, we looked at inflation numbers today, also higher than people had expected. So what does this mean for the United States? Why does Ben Bernanke feel that somehow or other we're going to be able to dodge that inflation bullet?
They, at the Fed, continue to look at core inflation. Core PCE year on year is down to 0.7%. We have data back to 1960 or 1959. It's a record low. So when you're looking at core prices, everything is actually disinflationary from the Fed standpoint. And Alan Blinder was on last week, and I asked him. I said, if you talk to the guy on the street, he's worried about paying for gas and meat. And there's inflation as far as they're concerned. And Blinder replied, first of all, food has to do with supply shocks. This isn't a demand function. And second of all, there's nothing that the Fed can do about it. And I tend to disagree with that. And that's why I worry that in killing the current beast, the deflation and the Great Recession, they're going to create a Frankenstein with inflation.
I suppose it isn't a demand function if you're talking about the U.S., where the population doesn't grow all that fast and, you know, the economic circumstances don't change all that much in relative terms, at least. But when you talk about emerging markets, I mean, you're sort of seeing the opposite there. And is it just that, you know, so many people are kind of missing that point?
I think that the Fed, now, personally, I connect the dots. I see what has gone on in North Africa over the past several weeks as a direct result of developed market quantitative easing. And it became an issue of whether the developed market policymakers wanted to save their own country or save the world. And they chose to save the developed country financial system and economies. Now, the problem is now that you've got high prices in food, the average, well, not the average Egyptian, but many Egyptians live on $2 a day. They can't
buy food.
Yeah,
bread subsidy is a pretty important thing in the Egyptian economy.
Yes, and there have been reports now that the governments with authoritarian regimes are stockpiling food to make sure that they have food to give out to people so that they don't get thrown out of office.
Saudi Arabia recently importing wheat beyond their current needs in order to do exactly as you described.
Yes, so I'm not sure. I personally believe that the Fed did create too much liquidity, and you've got liquidity sloshing around. There's also non-Fed type policy decisions that can be made regarding planting of arable lands, biogenetic, you know, engineering of foods to boost your crop yields.
Well, you know, you raise an interesting point, because it seems as though from the Federal Reserve's perspective, politics in the United States isn't going to play a role, because whether you believe that, you know, 2012 is going to be good or bad for the party in power, meaning the Democrats, can't you just imagine people saying, all right, the price of gasoline is going up, the price of food is going up, and wages are not going up fast enough to keep pace, and then the Federal Reserve says, well, wait a minute, we don't pay attention to energy prices or food prices. And then who's ever running for president says, well, by the way, everybody who votes, yeah, we pay attention to energy prices and food prices. And then the Federal Reserve gets the message really very loudly and clearly that whether it's core or whether it's headline inflation, people are paying attention to how much it costs.
That's where the line in the Eagles song about prisoner of his own device. Bernanke, and not just Bernanke, but the federal government have created their own cage. No matter what they do at this point, if they stop the easing, they create a hard landing. If they continue the easing, they create at least commodity and food inflation. That makes it very difficult for the Democrats in 2012. They're either going to have very high unemployment or they're going to have very high inflation, and both, you know, don't do well for the populace.
We're going to leave it there, because if you say any more, I'm going to get even more depressed. I want to thank you very much, TJ Marta from Bloomberg First Word. Coming up,
you can subscribe to Bloomberg's premium podcast service at Bloomberg.com/Tom Keene and listen to Taking Stock weekday afternoons at 3 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York, or on satellite radio, Sirius Channel 130 and XM Channel 129. Copyright 2011, Bloomberg LP.